But as the year went along, there were two brilliant students who stood out. There was Darcy Livingston and Paul Bulgren. Because you see, while everyone else was misspelling words, Darcy Livingston and Paul Bulgren, week after week, got them all right. 25 each week, through 200 words, 250 words, 300 words. And finally, on May 11th, 1964, the inevitable happened, and Darcy Livingston cracked. Poor girl couldn't handle it anymore. It was just too much for her. Now, I do not remember which word Darcy Livingston misspelled. It could have been seven, or second, or arithmetic. That E in there is tricky. Or subtraction. But I do know this. It wasn't the only word she misspelled. Poor girl. And by the end of the year, out of 400 possible words, Darcy Livingston had 395. Paul Bulgren had 400. You may applaud if you wish. Please, please, I'm humble. And this is the period I wrote, 400 score for the year is perfect. We like to think that about ourselves, don't we, sometimes? That I am just a little smarter than you. That I've got it together in a way you don't. We hear that, we see that in lots of ways in our society. For example, in the recent election, there are a lot of comments made about non-college educated voters, and not all of them were very positive. There were a lot of comments made about college educated voters and college students, and not all of them were very, very positive. We see these kind of comments a lot in many subjects. Climate change is one of the most important ways in which we see these two points of view each saying, I'm a little bit better than you. On the one side, there are those who claim that climate change is real and human beings are causing it. And they refer to those who, sometimes refer to those who don't buy this, as deniers. And they hold up the 97% consensus and they say, you just don't know science, or you are in the hands of big oil. On the other side are those who say, well, maybe the world is warming, but is it necessarily all caused by humans? And they will call those who say that they do believe this alarmist. They will refer to them as chicken littles. They will hold up their own scientific facts, and they will point out many doomsday predictions that have not come true. Of course, the most important issue today on who's smarter than others is this afternoon. And different people will know who is smarter and who is better. But we humans are very good at having this mindset that if you don't agree with me, you are nuts. There is something wrong with you. We like to think that those who perhaps have a different point of view on any number of issues, they are the proverbial knuckle draggers, who just are not very smart people. There is in our world today a small group of very vocal atheists, those who do not believe in God and who do not have very nice things to say about anyone who does believe in God. Richard Dawkins, British biologist, is one of the most famous. He wrote a book called The God Delusion. He has actually gone as far to say that anyone who believes in God is slightly mentally defective. And he has equated raising your children in the church to child abuse. If you have HBO, you maybe see Bill Maher. Bill Maher is another very vocal atheist who says that intelligent, rational people just have no use for God. And if you believe in God, there is something wrong with you. And again, if you think that this is something new to our age, it is not. There is nothing new under the sun when it comes to this. Way back in the New Testament, in the book of the Acts of the Apostles, in chapter 17, the Apostle Paul goes to Athens. He goes to Athens there to try and talk about Jesus Christ. And we are told in the book of Acts that all the Athenians and the foreigners living there would spend their time in nothing but telling or hearing something new. Just like people today like to do. And how do these brilliant Athenian philosophers react to Paul when he came and talked about Jesus? Well, the book of Acts says they said, "What does this babbler want to say?" And they scoffed at Paul when he talked about the idea of a resurrection. That was such a silly notion to the Greeks. Because to the Greeks, they believe in the immortality of the soul, the division of body and soul, and the idea of a bodily resurrection was silly to them. Also was silly to the Greeks was the idea that the gods would die for humans. In Greek mythology, in Greek thought, it was the other way around. Humans were the tools of the gods. Last week, we heard these words from 1 Corinthians chapter 1, where the Apostle Paul says, the message we preach of Jesus Christ, he says, it does not go over well among Jews and Greeks. Paul says, because the Jews demand signs, give us proof of God, and Greeks seek intellectual wisdom. And here's what Paul says the Jews and the Greeks thought about the gospel of Jesus Christ. Paul says that we proclaim Christ crucified, not some sign, not some intellectual pursuit. But to the Jews see this as a stumbling block, the idea that God would become a human, die, and be raised from the dead. That word translated stumbling block in English is a Greek word we all know. It's the word scandal. They were scandalized by the idea of Jesus Christ. He says the Greeks seek wisdom, and they considered the message of Christ to be foolishness. The Greek word foolish is another word you know in English. It's the root of our word moron. So to the Jews, it's a scandal. To the Greeks, it's moronic. But Paul goes on to say, but the foolishness of God to those who are called is the power of God and the wisdom of God. For God's foolishness is wiser than human wisdom, and God's weakness is stronger than human strength. If you have something you want to share with someone, how do you get your message out? Now, we live in a world, as I've said many times, of instantaneous communication. If you want to get your word out, your message out, it is so easy to do in so many ways. But in the ancient world, and up until not so long ago, if you really wanted to get your word out, you needed a skilled orator, someone who was golden-tongued, someone who was a magnificent word, someone with words. In the history of our nation, we've had such men, such as William Jennings Bryan, whose Cross of Gold speech at the 1896 Democratic Convention won him the nomination. He ran for president 3 times because he was such an amazing orator. President Roosevelt, at his first inaugural in 1933, gave that amazing speech, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." President Kennedy, when he was inaugurated, that immortal words that President Kennedy said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." And President Obama was known as an amazing orator. Even before he was elected president in 2008, he went to Berlin, and hundreds of thousands of people came to hear this amazing speaker. So how did the Apostle Paul go about proclaiming the good news of Jesus to those who heard him? Well, it was nothing like those men. Paul says, "I came with weakness, with fear, with trembling." He said that my words and my proclamation were not implausible words of wisdom. But when I came to you, I did not come proclaiming the mystery of God to you in lofty words of wisdom, for I decided to know nothing among you except Christ Jesus and him crucified. Paul simply told the story of what God had done. Paul relied upon the word, the spirit, and the power of God because Paul held up the wisdom of God, which is so strange to the world. But he said, God reveals his wisdom and power through the weakness of Jesus Christ. You see, my friends, Christianity is not some philosophical argument. Christianity is based upon a person, and that person is Jesus of Nazareth. And our Christian faith does not rely upon some brilliant man who can espouse these words that wows everyone. Our faith is based upon something that happened in history. Our faith is based upon the actual life of a real person and what happened to him, because God acts through history, and our faith as Christians is based upon what Jesus Christ did on the cross and what God did through Christ in the empty tomb. As Paul says, God gives us his secret. He reveals his secret through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. These things God has revealed to us through the Spirit, says Paul. The Spirit that enables us to believe things that so many others believe is stupid, foolish, scandalous, moronic. So what does all of this mean for you and me who live in the 21st century? What does this ancient message of the cross mean for us? Last weekend, we had our ninth grade retreat up at Pine Lake Camp. And on Saturday night on the retreat, the ninth graders, they all took time to share their faith statement. They talked about their faith, what they believe, the questions they have. And a number of the students asked really excellent questions. And I asked one of the students, because we said on the retreat we keep things confidential, but I wanted to share what one of the students asked. And I have his permission to share this with you. He raised his hand and he said this. It's a pretty good question. How can we know that our faith is the true faith? That's a pretty good question, isn't it? How can Christians know that our faith is the true faith when there are so many religions out there and there are so many people who are saying there is no such thing as God? And I started my answer by talking about Jesus Christ. And I said, well, if you could be saved by other ways, what's the point of Jesus? If you could be saved through some other system belief, why would God possibly need to send Jesus? Why would Jesus have to live and why would he have to die? What good would it do if it's just one way? And then I shared with the students the words of C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis, the brilliant Christian writer from the 20th century, from his little book called Mere Christianity. Lewis started out not believing in God. He became a very firm Christian. And in his book, Mere Christianity, he lets us know his thoughts on how we can answer the question of who is Jesus. Many of us are old enough to remember Let's Make a Deal, okay? Monty Hall and his three doors, and you'd have to know what's behind door one, two, or three, you'd make a guess. Well, C.S. Lewis says we have three options when it comes to answering the question, who was Jesus? He says this. The first answer is Jesus was a liar. He went around lying to everyone about who he was. He said, oh, I'm the Son of God. I'm this great miracle worker. And he was fooling everyone. He was a very clever liar. The second possible answer of who was Jesus is he was someone who was deluded. He just thought he was God's son. He thought he was someone brilliant, but he wasn't. He was just a deluded individual. But, says C.S. Lewis, there's a third possible answer to the question, who is Jesus? And that is, he really is who he said he was. And if he really is who he said he was, that changes everything, and that changes everyone. And for us as Christians, that empty tomb of Easter is the answer to the question, it is number three. Because we need to remember that the Apostle Paul, the one who wrote 1 Corinthians, the one who wrote about the resurrection, he saw the risen Lord Jesus with his own eyes. He knew Peter, he knew James, he knew John, he knew the followers of Jesus' friends, who also had seen Jesus raised from the dead. And Paul and these first Christians were 100% convinced that Jesus had been raised from the dead. And as Ron Burgundy would say, it's kind of a big deal. It's kind of a big deal if the answer is number three. He is who he said he was. So what does that mean for us? What are we supposed to do if we say, you know what, I think it's answer number three? Well, our gospel today gives us some real simple guidance. First thing we need to do, if we say, I believe Jesus was raised from the dead, he really is who he said he was, well, then we need to follow him. We need to commit ourselves to him. We need to give our lives to him. If he really is the Son of God, then we are pretty smart if we follow the one who really is the Son of God. If Jesus really is who he said he was, then you know what? You and I, we need to be salt. You are the salt of the world, says Jesus, the salt of the earth. We need to be those people who are spiced up by Jesus Christ, who go out into this world of ours, which in many ways is a bland and empty world, folks. We need to go out and spice it up for Jesus Christ. when the Apostle Paul and his friends went to the Greek city of Thessalonica and they started talking about Jesus, they really spiced it up. And the people who didn't like what they were saying dragged them to the city authorities, and they had a little nickname for these Christians. They called them the men who were turning the world upside down. That's what you and I are called to do. In our own little ways, in our own little corner of the world, you and I are called to be those who turn the world upside down, who spice it up, who work to change the world in some way, and who do not let the world change us. If Jesus really is who he said he was, well, then you and I, we are called to be the light of the world. Every time a child is baptized, we give that candle and we share these words from Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. Let your light so shine before others that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. That is our job, because so many people in this world of ours, they still stumble around in the dark and they need Jesus Christ. God's kind of wisdom is what he has given you and me. It's what we Christians have to offer to the world. And we will admit, I'll talk about this in the forum, a lot of people think what we believe is silly, it's stupid, and it's dumb, and they reject it. But the good news for us as Christians is that 2,000 years after Jesus, he's still a scandal. He's still a stumbling block to a lot of people who want to live life their way, who think they're smarter than God and everyone else. This is Wartburg Theological Seminary. This is where I went to seminary to be trained as minister. It's in Dubuque, Iowa. And I will always remember that on the very first day at seminary, in the very first class I attended, the very first thing the professor, Dwayne Treves, said was this. Remember this to my dying day. He said this: the Lutheran Church was born in a university setting. God gave us brains, and God expects us to use them. I like to think that I'm a fairly intelligent person because, remember, I did get a perfect spelling score. And just so you know, I did not save this book because I got a perfect score. I saved this book because the first spelling test I took was the day President Kennedy was shot. That's why I am not that vain, I hope. But I do like to think that I have an intellect, which I use. And as I shared with the kids on the retreat last weekend, I think very seriously about my faith. I ponder it, I pray about it, I study it. There is nothing that has been more studied and analyzed than Christianity. And I like to proclaim, and I do proclaim, that I do believe this is true. That we do know Christ crucified. And that as Christians, we know that our faith doesn't rest upon us, on our human intellect, but it rests upon God's wisdom. And that's what makes all the difference. It is so easy to be full of ourselves. It is so easy to think we are smarter and wiser and more insightful than everyone else. But we have to understand that that's not really the case, folks. We're good at some things, and a lot of other people are good at a lot of other things. We always need to keep the proper perspective. And that perspective needs to be on Jesus Christ. The one who was crucified for us, the one who was raised for us, the one who we believe really is who he said he was. For our faith is not based upon how smart I am. It is based upon how amazing Jesus Christ is. And he is so amazing that he came to give himself for you and me. And he is so amazing that God raised him from the dead. And that in Jesus Christ, we have the true wisdom of this world. I invite you to join us for our forum today at 9:15 as we continue to talk about this more.